Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. Are we going somewhere today?
Well, I wish, but we're going to talk about it. I'm really excited about this one because, you know, you and I have covered family travel quite a lot on this show, especially, you know, right now we're doing a lot of travel content. But over the years, we've spent a little less time talking about the way we prefer to travel on our own, and even less time than that talking about, like, literally how we get places. We've talked a lot about, you know, we did some fantasizing about, like, our dream vacations and things like that. But over the years, I feel like things like our personalities in an airport and things like that have come up, but we haven't really delved into that too much.
I love it. And I think it's so revealing to hear the way people like to travel. And we are framing this mostly around solo travel today, which, by the way, if you are a mom and you haven't been somewhere by yourself in like 100 years, we have also been there, but we've done a fair amount of solo travel. And I think when you are navigating an airport on your own, it is like a deep dive into personality quirks, I think.
It is. And we're going to be talking a lot about flying today because I think that's where, like, it's like that microcosm where you're making all these decisions outside of your usual bubble.
Yeah.
And you're like in this new environment. I do have to ask Sarah, and I didn't tell you that we were going to talk about this, but it just popped into my head. Can you remember the first solo trip of any, I don't know, of any significance that you took after becoming a mom?
Ooh, after becoming a mom.
I can tell you about mine while you're thinking.
Yeah, go.
So I very clearly remember it was, William was a baby. I was pregnant with Owen. So I really had never gone anywhere until I was pregnant with my 4th baby.
Okay.
Of any significance on my own, like maybe gone to my sister's house for the night or something like that. But even then I almost always had the kids with me, and I got on a train. So not on a plane, but a lot of similarities to, like, you know, getting your stuff packed and dealing with, like, yeah, boarding and all that. And I took a train from the middle of Michigan to Chicago for a writer's conference and, like, stayed in a hotel. And it was pretty life changing, honestly. I was like, wait, this world has been out here this whole time that, yeah, I've been, you know, in my house with kids. But that was really the first significant travel I think I even did, like, as a professional woman, like a solo professional woman,
yeah,
with or without kids. So it was pretty life changing in a lot of ways. But I do remember that was when I started to kind of, like, I don't know, create some preferences around things like how I liked to get places, like when, yeah, I'm not in my car driving, when I'm being escorted somewhere in some other kind of, you know, in some kind of transportation, how that looks for me. So that was pretty cool.
It is. It's completely, like, shifting because as you're talking, I'm thinking what we did a lot of for many years was, every once in a while, the two of us would go somewhere without kids, and we'd have a couple, yeah, nights to go to a wedding or something like that. So I can think of a handful of those when we had really, you know, small kids. Or if I went somewhere alone, I would often bring the baby. So I'd bring whoever, yep, was littlest. So then as, yep, you were talking, I was like, maybe I'm forgetting something. But the first thing that comes to my mind is the very first Mom 2.0 conference I went to with you and Violet. My 3rd kid was 14 months. And I remember because I even still brought a breast pump. I mean, she wasn't nursing that much, but she was still nursing. And I cannot remember a truly solo trip. I can remember going with Brian a few times, like here and there, or bringing a baby and leaving everyone else at home. But that's for sure not the same thing. Like, bringing a baby, yeah, and traveling by yourself is not the same thing as being by yourself.
No, not at all. Airport. Not at all. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think for me, I'm just thinking about this, like, after having kids. So if I was pregnant with Owen, and pretty pregnant, I remember being rather big, Will would have been, you know, a toddler. So about the same age as Violet, I think, was at that Mom 2.0. And if there were any trips that John and I took together without kids before that, I'm going to guess they were road trips. I don't remember he, yeah, and I getting on a plane together during that time. And sometimes, like, when you're traveling with a partner, you just kind of, I don't know, there's things you don't pay attention to.
Yeah.
And it's really not about the gender role thing. It's more like you're like, rely on them to pick up, like, to make some decisions or to, like, pick up the slack with certain, yeah, things, and you pick up the slack with the other things. Like, having everything within your control, but also your responsibility, is a very different experience.
It's a solo travel is completely, I would argue, completely different than, like, a spouse or a girlfriend getaway.
Yeah.
It's just a completely different animal. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Well, one thing we should touch on before we jump in, because I just have like a whole list of like quick questions that we'll go through today that I think will be really fun. But let's talk about our hometown airports, or like, I guess the airports we're most likely to be flying out of, because that really affects so many of these decisions. I'll go first. I live, you know, like we've talked about, in a small town type of area. So I have two options that I use. I use one or the other of these 99% of the time. And that is Midway in Chicago, which is still a smaller airport. It's not nearly as big as O'Hare. I try to avoid O'Hare unless I have to fly out of O'Hare for some reason, but it's hardly ever that I do. And then South Bend International Airport, which is a really small airport.
You threw international.
I did have to throw that in because they make a big deal about calling it South Bend International Airport. I'm not exactly sure how it's international, because maybe Mexico. Like, I'm just thinking, are there any direct flights?
It's got to be Canada. There's no way they're flying jets
Canada.
From.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. And then it kind of took me down a rabbit hole. Like, can they call themselves international if they have connecting flights to a different nation, or does it have to be direct? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, because you have to have like customs, and like you have to like I will get to my little airport, but it is not international. Yeah.
Well, mine is. So anyway,
South Bend International.
South Bend International Airport. A little point of pride for me. But it's teeny. There's like maybe three gates or four. Maybe more than that. There might be four or five gates, but it's like all in one room. So you can be anywhere in this terminal and see every gate. You might have to run really fast, like a long way to get to the gate, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But anyway, so for me, it's more likely I'm flying out of Midway because I'm pretty Southwest loyal. And if I can get a direct Southwest flight, I'll go to Midway for that. But you and I have, you know, started to see the benefits of flying out of those smaller airports, the closer, smaller ones, even if it means sometimes a layover. So it's becoming more like, I would say it's still like 70-30, but South Bend has won out for sure. Okay. South Bend International has won out several times recently.
And then
so what about you?
Give me the number of minutes from pulling out of your driveway to walking into the terminal. And I'm going to include things like parking your car and stuff, because as we know, the bigger airports offer conveniences, but they tend to be farther and more of a hassle. So like you're backing out of your driveway to you're walking into the terminal. How long for those two airports? Or how long to get there?
So if I was like backing out of my driveway, I would be at the South Bend Airport parking lot within about 40 minutes, maybe a little less from where I live now. In fact, from where I live now, I think probably 35. Okay. And then I would be inside the airport building within 5 minutes. Okay. There's just a big parking lot. And, you know, if you park relatively close and walk fast, you're in fast. And then I'd be through security in about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's like so, so fast. Even Midway with as relatively close as it is, where I live now, it's about an hour and 40 minute drive.
Yeah.
But then you got to deal with the, you know, parking, which depending on where you park can take no time at all or a bit. And then security is still fine at Midway. It's not terrible, but it's going to be 15-20 minutes to get through. So yeah, like it adds up. And then with Midway too, it just costs more money to park.
Yeah.
I want to say parking at South Bend is $8 a night. Nice. So that's like nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, but you're going to have a layover.
Right.
And sometimes you're going to have two, and you know, then the flights are limited. So there's benefits and drawbacks.
For sure.
How about you?
So, well, I moved back to my hometown of Santa Barbara in summer of 2020. There hasn't been a lot of travel since moving back, but there has been a little bit. And I grew up here, so I have the experience of flying out of Santa Barbara. It is also a very small airport. They did a remodel in the years that I didn't live here. And so it's quite lovely now. It's pretty to look at. It's still, I think, six gates. And there's just not a lot. They keep adding things. Like they added Southwest and they added nonstops to Chicago, but then they took them away. It was like seasonal. So it's very much a regional airport. You're going to go up and down the West Coast. You can go to San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Salt Lake, Vegas, Phoenix, like Western regional destinations. I think the farthest you can go east is Dallas on like once a day. And we've joked about doing a meetup in Dallas because you can fly there from South Bend and I can fly there from Santa Barbara. And that's like the only place we can both get. But the good news is it is 20 minutes from my house. Like you said, the parking is easy. Security is 2 seconds. So it has all those benefits of a very small regional airport. And especially for me on the coming home end, I just love like walking out, getting in my car, going and knowing I have 20 minutes to my house. So that's huge. And then if I ever wanted to, LAX is about 90 miles. If you can time it without traffic, it would be an hour and a half, but you'd have to time it without traffic. And there's nothing worse to me than LAX in terms of the parking and the security lines. They've got to figure it out, and maybe someday they will, but it is not an easy airport to check into. If you have a layover there or if you're coming in there, it's not quite as bad, but to leave from LAX and have to park a car, I would avoid at all costs. I'd much rather have a layover and leave out of Santa Barbara. So that's my current situation. I've also lived in Phoenix, which is that's a great airport to have nearby. And when I lived in Orange County, I loved John Wayne. John Wayne was a great size airport and it went a lot of places and it was only 20 minutes from my house. So I think your hometown airport makes a huge difference in how you plan travel and how you feel about airport stuff, which we're going to talk about. So,
well, I just wanted to update you that I just looked at the South Bend International Airport's FAQs. They're literally one of their FAQs is, what makes South Bend a, quote, international airport? And the answer is they're private flights.
Oh.
You can't actually board a flight to Mexico or Canada from here. You could take your private jet, though.
That's so interesting. Well, then maybe Santa Barbara is international. I'm 100% sure there are people on their private jets going to Cabo and stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, well, maybe you should start referring to it by its proper name. Give it its credentials.
I think it's literally Santa Barbara Municipal Airport or something. It's very unromantic.
Santa Barbara's old hometown airport.
It looks like a bus. It used to look like a bus stop. It now looks nicer. And also, side note, when we have planned travel, the fact that both of our airports are SB, and when we're going back and forth quickly and like sending texts or sending itineraries, once I moved back here, I was like, oh, this is going to be confusing. Who's flying out of SB into SB? It's kind of funny.
Yes. SB. And I think you're SB. I'm SB. You're SBA and I'm SBN, I think is the difference. Yep. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, I have all these fun questions to dig into that I think are going to be very telling about us. Right. So we'll be right back. We're welcoming back our sponsor, New Sphere. Sarah, I love this company's mission to provide quality online education to preschoolers and young kids, no matter where they're located. With all the disruption families have faced over the past couple of years, the learning losses are really starting to pile up, and it's great to have a safe, affordable online option to supplement what kids are able to get in person or even as a standalone preschool program.
Yes, all New Sphere classes are virtual and led by experienced early childhood educators. 5 days a week, your child will meet for about an hour with a small group of up to 8 kids led by the same teacher at the same time. Those small groups and that consistency really allows children to build bonds with their classmates and teacher, even though it's in an online forum. Kids are also really encouraged to interact in class, so it's more similar to the in-classroom experience than a lot of online programs that are just basically giant Zoom calls. The instructors help learners express their ideas, thoughts, and feelings, as well as learn to socialize with their fellow classmates.
Like I mentioned, New Sphere classes are great as a standalone preschool program, or they also work great paired with other early childhood education you might be doing. They've got programs starting from age 2 all the way up to kinder prep for ages 4 to 6, and they have times available to fit all schedules. And New Sphere just launched a free activity video library, which we'll link up in the show notes.
Visit newsphere.com/themomhour to find out more and to get a 1 week free trial, and use code themomhour to get 20% off your first month when you enroll. Again, that's newsphere.com/themomhour for a 1 week free trial, and use code themomhour to get 20% off your first month when you enroll. So Megan, since we're talking about the airport a lot today, I have to ask, do you have go-to footwear for a long travel day?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I like to mix it up. So I could go with my bright yellow Nana retro sneakers or my Carson booties. It just kind of depends on how casual I want to be.
Okay, I get it. So you'll wear any number of shoe styles to travel as long as they're made by our sponsor, Vionic. And that does make total sense because you need supportive, comfortable shoes for a travel day. But you also want to look cute when you arrive, right?
Exactly. And with Vionic, there's no need to choose between comfort and style. Every pair of their shoes features VioMotion technology, which is a fancy way of saying that a podiatrist helped design these shoes with a deep heel cup for stability, cushioning at the ball of your foot, and then incredible arch support.
And get this, Megan, you can try out a pair of Vionic shoes, wear them around for a month, and send them back if they're not working for you. We're not talking about a quick try on here. Like, you can wear them around your normal life, outside, whatever, and Vionic will let you return them for a full refund within 30 days if it's not a great fit.
Enjoy free shipping on your order at vionicshoes.com/themomhour or use promo code themomhour at checkout. That's vionicshoes.com/themomhour or use promo code themomhour at checkout to get free shipping. Okay, Sarah. So before we start with my long list of questions, let's talk a little bit about why we're most likely to fly by ourselves and not, you know, with a partner or kids. Would that be personal or work related for you? Because I think that does change the answers sometimes.
Yes. A little bit of both in the years, you know, before the pandemic, but right. after like weaning my last kid, like if you look at that period of time, which was like a 5-year period where I did a fair amount of solo travel, I would say 2/3 work and 1/3, often like going to see a friend's new baby or going on a girl's trip or going to see my sister having a new baby. A specific, not like a vacation-y thing, but more like I'm going to go visit someone for a specific reason. You know, I was the first among many friends to get married and have kids. So in my early mothering years, a lot of my friends were still getting engaged, getting married, having a first baby. And so as I came out of the trenches, I was able to do things like, you know, go to someone's baby shower or go visit them when they had a new baby. So I'm going to say 2/3 yeah. work and 1/3 like going to visit someone for a very specific reason. Not so much like a true vacation, but like a friend visit.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think for me, I just have less far-flung friends. And I think there's something to the fact that you, the college that you went to yeah. was like such a draw from for people all over the country. And, yeah.
and
that
was so much too.
And then you moved. Yeah. Right. So I think for me, like people, those trips tend to be road trips for me. Right. The like going to visit a baby or go to a wedding or something like that. So for me, it's probably 80% business or like business in the front, you know, party in the back, whatever, like, right. like business with a little pleasure mixed in if I'm flying solo. And yeah. there's some exceptions to that. And like, when I come to visit you, you know, what's that? Is that it's business, but it's fun. Right. And, you know, so there's more than that that I'm probably even remembering, but it mostly work is at least a part of it. And yeah. I think that does, it changes your mindset around flying and it changes sometimes the choices that you have to make because you're not just picking a destination and going wherever you feel like for fun. Like right. you are stuck with the destination that you have to go to and you have right. to get there in the way that makes sense. All right. So let's dive into the first question. And this one is, do you prefer, like, what time of day do you prefer to fly? Would that be like early morning or later? And I'm just going to go first on this one because I think people might be surprised by this answer that I am beginning to prefer really or early morning flights, which for me seems very out of character mm-hmm. because I'm not a super early morning person. But what I think I've realized is that even though I'm not a super early morning person, I'm even less of a like able to get off a plane and then drive
yeah.
person late at night. Like that now, I just can't handle it. If I've been sitting on a plane for 2 or 3 hours and I get home and it's after dark and you get that sleep, that plane sleepy yeah. when you like are on a plane after dark and then wait for your bags and then go out to your car and then try to drive 2 hours home. I'm a danger. I'm a menace to society. So I'm really trying to shift that, which has been interesting, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I will refer back to distance to airport from house because yeah. it makes a huge difference. Now that I'm 20 minutes from my little hometown airport, I don't mind. There's a lot of 6 o'clock, like 6 to 7 a.m. flights out of Santa Barbara, or there's like a whole spate of them that you can choose from. And often the next one isn't till like 1:30 or 3. It just doesn't have a lot of flights. So I am fine with a first thing in the morning flight if I'm by myself and if I'm going out of my hometown airport. And same thing, I'm okay getting in a little bit late. It's all about if there is a whole nother leg at the other end mm-hmm. Or like setting your alarm for 3 hours earlier because you have yeah. to drive in, that is a game changer. So I guess I don't mind the first thing in the morning flight as long as it's not a super long distance to the airport.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, for me too, like that drive time then means that if I had a super early in the morning flight, I could be getting up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I don't like that.
But I'm actually pretty good at that. Like for me, it's actually easier to get up and get moving if I've just gotten like 4 hours of sleep and it's 3 a.m., but I knew that I had to do that than it would be sometimes to get up at like six. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because I'm naturally kind of wake up in the middle of the night anyway or what, but it's like the novelty of it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's like, yeah. you're like, I can do this. Remember when I made you take me home from a bar because I was getting so anxious because I had to get up in like 4 hours? You remember that? We were out after your show, I think, after Chicago. Was that time I visited you? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And I was like, I can't be out till 1 a.m. I have to get up at 4:15. And you nicely took me home.
Yes. And then I went back out. But I understood because I didn't have to be up for anything. Yeah. I'm actually, when I travel with my kids in a few weeks, we are actually getting on a really early morning flight because the tickets were so cheap. And I guess that's the other thing. Sometimes if you're willing to do those really early flights or the really late flights, they're very cheap, but I just can't land at 1 a.m. Like, that's not going to work for me ever anymore. But I can get my family. I'll just make them sleep in their clothes.
Yeah.
And have everything packed and by the back door or in the car. And we will just, they'll all just stumble into the car and we'll get in. And
yeah.
If it was just me, it would be a very easy choice. But even with the three hangers on, it was still a pretty easy choice because the tickets were just that much better. We're flying to the West Coast, and that means I'll be there. Yeah. Like, and it won't be, you know, it'll just, we'll have a whole day to start.
Yeah.
So how, in the same vein, how early, like how much before your flight do you want to get to the airport?
So I like to work backwards from this question. And like, I think of once I'm through security, how much time do I want to have from being through security until I have to get on the plane? Because like we've talked about parking, security, those things are almost like a whole separate part of the journey. I think my sweet spot is around 45 minutes between now I'm through security. I've done everything I have to do. Now I have 45 minutes until they're going to call my group number. 45 allows for like a quick bite, a little yeah. snack shop thing, like, or just sitting at the gate and waiting. I think that's about right. So usually for most airports, like for my hometown airport, then I just have to get to the airport an hour early because it's less than 15 minutes to park, go in, go through security, et cetera. But if I was going to a bigger airport, if I was going to LAX, I'd work backwards. I'd want to get to the airport, you know, an hour and a half probably early, and then allow for that like unknown of security. I'm punctual and I can run anxious. I've never been a like, I need to get there 3 hours ahead. I think I've just flown a lot and I've seen all that can happen. And I've never had something happen that takes up 2 hours of completely unexpected delay. Right. And of course it could, but I have a track record of like not missing flights. So I'm like, it'll be fine.
Yeah. And I think too, that like you're efficient with your time. So for you, it'd probably be annoying to you to get there too early and then just have time to kill or waste. It's funny. I did not fly on a plane until right after 9/11. It was sometime within the first year, right after 9/11. Like, I think my first time I ever stepped on a plane was like early 2002, I think. Okay. And so in those days, you got there early, like two plus hours. That was just, and that was the mentality around the first few times I ever flew. Yeah. So then I kind of got it in my head that that's what flying should look like. And it took me kind of a long time to realize that like, actually that's totally unnecessary most of the time, because like you said, I have missed flights. I've missed a couple of flights, but it was never because I got there, you know, an hour and a half ahead instead of two. It was because something weird happened. Yeah. Like, one time I was on a bus in New York to, I think it was LaGuardia, and I got on the shuttle bus and then like the bus driver just never showed up. And so by the time the rest of the passengers and I figured it out, we had to like change to a different bus and we were all late, like really, really late. But what are you going to do? It was 45 minutes from the airport. There was no way to speed that up. And I had no other transportation.
Right.
So something fluky like that, I couldn't have planned around that really. Now I would say more like 90 minutes. But here's the thing. If it's the afternoon, I love killing time in an airport. Mm. Love it. I love to have like a leisurely lunch with a cocktail. Like I like to sit and people watch. I like to like go, if it's a nice airport, I like to go in the stores. Like I just really like that. So it also depends on the time of day. If it's morning, so say I was flying out of South Bend first thing in the morning, I want to roll up, get on the flight, close my eyes. Like I don't want to kill any time in the airport. And I also know I'm not going to deal with any security issues. It's going to be really fast. So that also changes it.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say I'm more leisurely about it than you might think. And I usually get there earlier than I need to. But at the same time, I also am fine making it more like an hour and 15. And here it also because I'm driving, if I'm going to Chicago, I'm picking up an hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so the time difference makes it very confusing at times.
Yeah. You have to quadruple check that.
Yes.
Business.
Like, yeah. I will often be like going, okay, so I'll write it down. I'll say, okay, so my flight leaves at 11:15 Chicago time. And I'll write down 12:15 and then just try to forget 11:15. Right. And then like, it's like my brain can't figure it out sometimes. So that else just adds an interesting little,
yeah,
little tidbit. Okay. So if all things were equal, and I'm assuming, you know, you have the choice here, would you rather like Uber or be dropped off at the airport, park in the closest garage? Are you okay with economy lots? And I'll go first on this. I'll just say I will pay a handsome sum to avoid an economy lot. And I'll just leave it at that. Like, I know I don't always have the option of getting dropped off. That's kind of a luxury when you're going 2 hours away. And I can't Uber around here. That wouldn't work at all. So it's usually either in South Bend, there's just one big lot. So there really isn't a less economy version, but in Midway, for the difference of, you know, tens of dollars a day, I think the difference is like $50 to park in the garage that's right in the building versus I want to say like $15 a day or something like that for the economy lot. Unless I'm going to be there like a long time, I usually will pay for that garage parking. It's just so worth it for me to like get on an airport or on an elevator and then step off the elevator and there's the check-in.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, as you were talking, I was having flashbacks of Phoenix, which is really the last hometown airport I had where I drove to the airport quite a bit. And we did it so often with little kids. And it's so funny. I think in our mind, no one would leave their car for multiple days in the garage. And I don't know if that's because Phoenix was prohibitively expensive, but I remember thinking like it wasn't even allowed. Of course it was allowed. They were just charging you
premium. They would take your money.
And so and those economy lots at Phoenix are, you know, they're a bus ride away and it's hot. And most of my memories involve traveling with a bunch of strollers and little kids. And we're talking about solo travel. So I did it. But in the now times, my airport is really small. And I just avoid LA. I would probably take that little bus to LA. So avoid parking at all. If I was going down,
I took that little
LAX
bus. It was
great. It's fine. It's the Santa Barbara Air Bus is what it's called. And it's like a 2 hour bus ride and it drops you right at the terminal. So, yeah.
Well, and I think too, you know, like if I was at Midway, say, and I was alone and it was the middle of the summer and it was daytime. So all of those things.
Yeah.
Then I probably would use the economy lot because it's not a big deal to stand around on a nice summer day and get on a bus and when you're by yourself. But I have really like cringe inducing memories of trying to get kids and strollers in the snow, standing around waiting for the bus to show up. It's dark. No one will like, I remember being pregnant and having a toddler and no one would give me their seat. And I actually don't think I was flying alone, but I think for some reason I was parking. And maybe John had the other kids and was checking in the bags or something. For whatever reason, I was just me and a baby. Or maybe I was flying alone. Now that I think about it, that's possible. And just how much stress that added. And also a lot of time. Sometimes an unpredictable amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not my preference. No. And now I feel like it may seem luxurious, but I will figure out any other way.
Yeah, we've paid our dues. It's like sleeping on a couch. Like at a certain age, you just opt for paying for your own hotel room. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, how about checking bags versus carrying on? And then talk about what kind of bag you use. I know you just got a new one. I pretty recently got new luggage. So just talk about all things baggage.
Okay. Well, when I'm traveling by myself, I actually prefer to carry on if I can. And usually I can because it's just me. I'm not bringing like, just because I do like efficiency and I love being able to walk off a plane and just hop in a cab or go to my destination. The getting luggage after a long flight is like not my favorite. So I would usually carry on, and we have a set of Tumi luggage, which has been really worth the cost for us. We have one big one and one carry on, and our Tumi carry on, I'll find a link and I'll link to it. But it's kind of like a Mary Poppins magical bag because people, security and flight attendants will always give it us like a little side eye. And like, they don't believe that it will fit in the overhead bin or that it'll fit through the conveyor belt.
I love that security. You can trick them.
Yeah, but it does. It's just like, it's like somehow the very biggest it can be and still fit in an overhead bin. So that's my carry-on. And Brian and I share that piece. I mean, we both take it if we're going somewhere. And then I did get a new backpack. Like, I'm going to call it like a laptop backpack or a travel backpack for Christmas. And I was so in need. I had nothing comfortable to make my way through an airport with for years. Remember how long I was coveting your backpack? Yeah. I was using like tote bags and things like that.
That is so unideal too.
I know. And, like, and having it hurts a tote.
That's
your
like
shoulder.
Flipping off your shoulder. Yeah.
And yep. I have a 15-inch MacBook. Like, my computer is not lightweight. It's like a beast. And I always bring my computer even on personal trips. So the brand is Calpak, C-A-L-P-A-K. And I think I found this, like, I Googled like best laptop backpacks before Christmas and put this on my Christmas list. I love it. It has so many pockets. I would use this even if it wasn't a work trip, just as my day pack. And it comes in really cute colors. It's a material that like wipes clean. So it's not the dressiest. It's not like, it doesn't look like leather and fancy. It's a little sportier. But I have used it just on, I haven't flown with it yet, I don't think, but I have used it in other ways and I just love it. So a link to that too.
A good backpack makes such a big difference. They're also easier to get in. Like, when you slide them under the seat in front of you, mm-hmm. it's so much easier to access what's in them.
Yeah.
I found that that was never easy to do with like more like a duffel style or a tote bag. So yeah, I've been a big fan of the backpacks for a while.
Oh, I have one more really quick thing to say about carry-ons is that because I like to carry on when I travel alone, but we almost always check baggage when we're with the family. I have left my suitcase, my carry-on suitcase, like at a restaurant or at a gate so many times because once I'm through security, my norm is having a carry, like a backpack or a purse, but not a suitcase. And so then when I go by myself, I forget that I also have this suitcase. And many, many times I've like walked half a terminal length and realized my suitcase is like back at the restaurant. So not a great track record.
That
there.
Is exactly the kind of thing that I would do. Exactly. That's how Clara and I left our coats one time.
Right. Yeah.
At a California kitchen. And I don't even remember what airport we were in. And I don't remember why we had our coats, because usually what I would do the last thing is put our coats in the suitcase, knowing you won't really need a full, like a winter jacket while you're flying. You know what I mean? And for whatever reason, we still had them on and we left them. So I guess to answer this question, I would love to see myself as one of those like smooth travelers. I remember seeing that movie with George Clooney and Anna
Kendrick,
mm-hmm. where they're like flight attendants, I think, or maybe pilots. I don't remember. They fly a lot. That's all. Or maybe they're just business. They might just be business people that fly a lot. The only thing I remember about this movie is that they both were so efficient in the airport, and like everything was like, they had their carry-on, and it was like, I remember watching that and thinking, wow, like that's how a real expert travels. But the thing is, I don't want to be a real expert when I'm traveling. I want to check my bag and then have my hands free. Mm-hmm. And I want to not have to worry about what you just described, leaving a carry-on, because that's the kind of thing I would do. I also don't want to have to worry about making sure that everything that's in my bag is like carry-on.
Yeah, able. That takes some practice. It really does.
Yeah, and I just don't want to have to worry about it. Like, if I want to throw in at the last minute, like a full-size shampoo or something, I don't want to have to be like, oh, but I can't, blah, blah, blah. So I love that I have a suitcase that's just mine to do whatever I want with. And then once I check it, I never have to think about it until I get off. And there's something very comforting to me about, even though I know it's not really always in good hands.
Yeah.
At least it's in someone else's hands.
Yeah.
And I don't have to, you know, worry about it. So I did get new luggage late last year because I had been using this terrible suitcase that was just, well, it wasn't terrible when I got it, but I used it for like a really long time and was falling apart. It was, you know, pieces were starting to kind of like come off of it, and the zippers had ripped out. So I did a lot of shopping and I ended up getting a coordinating set. I've never had a coordinating set of luggage. So I got a Monos. It's one of those like Instagram friendly brands. It's right. Very beautiful looking. And I got it in a rust color. So that's the suitcase. Ooh, that is cute. And then
I'm
like,
looking at it.
Yeah.
Right
now. Oh yeah. It's really, I love the way it looks. And then a coordinating backpack and duffel. And so I already had a backpack that was great for like round town stuff. And I still use it for that, but I never liked, first of all, it's very soft-sided, and I didn't feel like it was sturdy enough for travel. I felt weird about, you know, setting my computer down or the bag down with my computer in it hard and like kicking it under a seat. It just never felt quite as sturdy as what I wanted. And I wanted something a little bigger with more space for things like an overnight trip. So with a separate sleeve for my laptop and then still plenty of room to like stash a pair of shoes and an outfit, like something like that. And so it's perfectly big for that. And then I have a coordinating duffel. So there's a suitcase, a duffel, and a backpack.
So fun.
And I may end up at some point getting a carry-on, maybe, because I can see the benefit.
Yeah.
And maybe 10% of the time I think, oh, it really would be nice to carry on. So yeah, I just love it. And I haven't actually had a chance to travel. I use the backpack all the time and the duffel bag all the time.
Cute.
But I haven't actually traveled anywhere to use the suitcase yet, but I'm excited about doing that soon. But like, I've just played with it and it rolls so nice. Like the rolling is just so smooth and the telescoping handle is so smooth.
Huge difference.
And it's not black. So it's good. But it's also not like I didn't have to tie a scarf around it or whatever to make it stand out. It's just, it's beautiful. So nice. I'm excited.
That's exciting.
Well, okay. Tell me about your security line personality, just like how you behave in the security line. And then as a side note, are you digital everything? Do you still print anything out like your boarding pass? I'll go first on this one. I actually like to appear at least very with it in security. I like to have all my stuff out. I like to have my
performatively organized.
I'm performatively organized. some of that's just because I don't want to hold anybody else up. So there's the two in me. But part of it too is like, I want to make it clear I know what I'm doing.
Yep.
Like I know how this works. And I'll actually get a little thrown off. Every now and then I'm in a security line where something's different than usual. Mm-hmm. Like today you don't have to take your shoes off or like, you know, leave your belt on, you dummy, or whatever. Like some every now and then I feel like just to mess with us, they change some small thing, or maybe it's like that airport specific rules or something. And then they kind of bark at you. And I want to be like, but I thought I was being extra good.
Right.
I was taking everything off, or I was like putting everything in its own bin. Yeah. And Midway recently changed their bin size. They used to have these really kind of like the bins were almost the size of like one of those dish tubs that you can buy at the dollar store. And then they got really big, which is great because it's much more efficient. But now I'm like, am I allowed to layer things? Like,
what are the new rules? Yeah.
What are the new rules? So I don't like to be haphazard in security, which might seem out of place because I can be rather haphazard. And then on the haphazard side, there's the fact that I still like paper. I like to have a paper boarding pass. I actually really like to have the ones they print out on that cardstock.
Oh, yeah.
Like for the machine, but I will print one out at home and that's fine too. But then I'll always lose it. I'll lose it at least once or twice. I just misplaced it. Like, I don't know what pocket it's in or did I stick it in my purse? Something about having to get my phone out and like find the boarding pass on my phone when I've been using my phone for other things and then hold it just right over the scanner stresses me out. I don't like doing that. So there's all of my idiosyncrasies and anxieties.
I will say that the digital, the QR codes and the scanning has a learning curve, not just because you and I are getting on in age, but I just mean like when that started
not in age,
when that started being the norm, it did feel stressful to like, oh my gosh, I have to pull up this thing. Where was it? Where's the email? Where's the link?
Right.
Now that I have pushed through that learning curve, I prefer all digital. I also kind of feel like, what's the worst that could happen? They're going to send me over to some other desk and look up my, like if I lost it or something.
They're going to kick you out.
So I generally don't print stuff anymore. And I never do when it's just me. If I printed stuff, it might be if the whole family was going to be there. And then I just little like peace of mind. I also like I try not to hold up the line. I try to be efficient. I try to be really friendly in security. I think I try to be compassionate to people who there's always a few people who have literally never done this before. And it's, you know,
or who have a baby in a stroller. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. So I try to be like in general in the airport, I try to be nicer than average because there's plenty of people being not nice, including to the TSA agents, and just be a little bit friendly. One funny thing is that because I'm a Californian and I've lived in California and Arizona, I almost always am wearing footwear that does not require socks. Like in general, socks for me are for like running shoes, like athletic wear, and then like a very occasional cold winter day. And every single time I have to take my shoes off and I'm like, oh, all these smart people wore socks today. And now I have feet on disgusting.
Fair feet. Yes.
But does it help me for next time? No, I never remember to wear socks. I just, the footwear that I wear just doesn't involve socks so much of the time, 90% of the time. So that's kind of funny. I think that's all I have to say about security.
Do you dress specifically for security? Like, do you dress specifically in something that is, you know, a sweater, clearly not a coat? Or like, I have thought about that before. Like, if I wear this hoodie, it might look like a coat and I'll have to take it off. Or if I wear these pants, like I have to wear a belt and I don't want to do right. that. Things like that.
I don't think I think about that as much, especially case in point, I never even remember that it's more hygienic to wear socks. So no, I do think right. about travel outfits for other comfort purposes. I think a lot about it, but I don't think security ever enters into my calculation.
Well, and because you're kicking off, you know, California shoes, that's very different than me thinking like on a cold day, make sure that you wear those boots that don't have to be zipped.
Right. Yeah.
To get on and off, or just don't zip them. I've done that before. I've worn zip up boots and I just left them unzipped because I don't want to have to like deal with that while my arms are full. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Well, do you buy snacks and things at the bookstore? And then a related question, do you bring your own travel mug? Do you like get a coffee there and use their paper, like their paper cups? What does all that look like for you at the airport?
I usually buy something really boring at the bookstore. I would buy like a bottle of water and like a Kind bar or something like that. Something that in case like it's a super long flight or in case a delay or something so that I just don't have zero food. So I would buy a boring snack and water. And then here's the thing about me. I will get into being a nervous flyer in a little bit later, but I generally am not like super, I'm a little amped up at the airport. I am a little just on edge and I don't drink a lot of beverages just like in this state. Like I want to get there. So I don't
state of being.
I really don't.
Your thirst goes away. It's like your body shuts down and you don't feel thirst anymore.
It's kind of like for me drinking, like having a coffee or like an iced tea or a glass of wine is for when I have arrived at my destination. It's almost like I suspend all of those activities and I don't really, other than having water just in case I'm thirsty, I wouldn't bring a travel mug because I would not be drinking until I am safely at my destination. Drinking anything, I mean.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Well, like you, I always will get a bottle of water and then something like, I don't know, for some reason, a bag of chips, like kettle chips always sounds amazing to me in the middle of a flight. Or I'll get like trail mix or something like that. Because I typically don't like the snacks that are given out on a flight. And sometimes you can't even buy food depending on what happens or whether that airline even offers good options. So I like to have something rather hearty, especially for a long flight. And then I'll always get a magazine, typically one that I don't read at home. Like I'll get Vanity Fair or Vogue. And funny side story, I was thinking about this Inventing Anna story we were talking about a little bit earlier. The Anna, is it her Delvey that, that's on Netflix, and I haven't seen the show, but I did read the article and I remembered that it was on a plane. Okay. So all I could remember was like, I remember reading about this woman on a plane back in like 2018 or something. And then I was like, so it must've been Vanity Fair. And it was, that's how the article that I found and that I read.
Recall for what you read.
Because I always, I just remembered being in a place where like, why would I even read that story? It's not the kind of story I would typically read like about a socialite scammer. Like that's not usually in my, you know, lineup of reading material. So it felt like an airplane read to me. And then I was like, okay, so if it's an airplane read about a socialite scammer, it probably was like Vanity Fair, Vogue, maybe Cosmo. I don't really read Cosmo very often. So probably Vanity Fair or Vogue. So I'll usually get something like that. Like I would never buy those magazines at home, but there's something about flipping through like fashion spreads on a plane that I love. Or I'll get, sometimes I'll get things like Fast Company or Inc., things like that. But I don't typically buy those at home either. But it's just fun. It's like a fun, different mentality that you get in when you're flying. Especially if it's a work trip, then it's tends to, like, you know, Inc. or Fast Company. And then my mug. So when I think to bring my own, I really like to. I really love, it's almost like a comfort thing for me to get on a plane with a full tea. And just to know that at any moment I could have tea.
Yeah.
Like I could have hot tea.
You would have to get it after security. So you would bring the,
I would bring an empty, I'd bring an empty through and then I would fill it up in security and I would get it perfectly to my liking. And you can't really do that with, like, I don't want to fly with a Starbucks cup in my hand because you can't put them down. Like they don't, the Hydro Flask I have completely seals up. I can stick it in my bag. I can tuck it away for takeoff. And then I'll get it out of my bag, like, 2 hours later and it's still hot. In fact, sometimes it's too hot and I'll put ice in it I'll ask the flight attendants for ice because it's too hot. It stays hot for so long. So I just, for me, like that's when I'm really prepared and it's going to be like a leisurely flight day where I'm going to be in the plane for like 3.5 to 4 hours. And I want to be, I want all of my creature comforts.
Yeah, it's smart.
It's like, yeah, it's like me and my Vogue and my Hydro Flask.
Yeah,
and my
tea. It is smart because, I mean, I'm a coffee drinker usually, but airplane coffee itself is terrible. And I do think that would be comforting to me, but for some reason I don't do it. Yeah. Also, well, to be clear, we were discussing inventing Anna before we recorded, in case people were confused. Were we?
Oh, right. Sorry. Not before, like in this episode, but before we even started recording.
You were all there, listeners. Remember when we were talking about that?
Remember when we talked about that? You're like, no. The other thing is that I think is I've always found kind of amusement in those articles about like how to travel with your facial spray, like the ones that would be for like in a fashion magazine. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like with your hydrating facial spray and your eye mask and all that.
But
I could actually see myself developing into someone who has like a whole thing, like a whole ritual that happens on the plane as I get older, because I do think things like, you know, like your skin getting dehydrated and things like that when you fly, it just becomes more noticeable the older you get.
Agreed.
And so I could see me being that kind of obnoxious girl in the seat next to you with the special eye pillow and the rose water mist.
Pressure socks. Like, like what are they called? The socks that, compression.
Like compression?
Yeah.
Yeah. Compression yes. Socks. Perhaps. Perhaps I'll get to that point when the varicose veins start.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one more question before we go to break. Do you, when you're there, you're all through security, do you go right to your gate and wait? Do you kill time in the airport bar and then run like crazy when boarding is announced? I mean, where are you in that spectrum?
I like to be in the vicinity. So I usually walk right to my gate so that I know where it is and kind of confirm on the board, right? That like, because they will make those last minute changes or you can get confused. So I'm going to go to the right terminal and the right section and confirm that I know where I'm boarding. And then I might wander a little bit in the vicinity. But honestly, most likely, again, with the kind of suspended animation, I'm just really ready to get all this over with. So I'm most likely just going to park at the gate and kind of keep an ear open for the boarding calls and stuff like that. There would have to be something pretty exciting for me to go do. And likely I've not planned for that.
Well, it might not be surprising to you that I like to settle in. If I have more than 10 minutes, that's too little. So I fly Southwest a lot. And in Southwest, you start lining up around 30 minutes before your flight takes off. Sometimes it's a little later if they're back, you know, if they're behind. And I try to get A boarding or B boarding at the very latest. So that means I kind of need to be there like 30 minutes before. So if I have like an extra 20 minutes or more on top of that, I will absolutely go park myself someplace and eat, maybe have a drink. Sometimes it works out that I can position myself to actually see the gate. Like I can see the people lining up or not. Some airports are great about having multiple places that you can check and see. And if that's the case, I just settle in, especially if I've done the thing where I got there really early on purpose and I'm like, now I'm in airport time. I'm like people watching and just relaxing. I might read, I might work. Like I will really relax. And one time in the South Bend International Airport, I did that. And first of all, I didn't realize that the flight that I was, it was like one of those kind of economy airlines. They board super duper early, like really, really early. And there are no announcements made in the terminal. There's a loudspeaker and I heard things happening over the loudspeaker. So I thought they would say like, we're boarding now or something like that. That didn't happen. They never, and I would have heard it cause I was right next to it. So I'm just sitting there like enjoying a sandwich or something. And this woman walks by and she's like, you better pay attention. They will leave you. And I didn't realize like she was talking to me. I was kind of looking around like, is she talking to me? Cause I still had like an hour before my flight took off. So I thought I had all the time in the world. And then I hear my name over the loudspeaker. And then I'm like, what? Like, we're not even close. So I come out and it's like, there's just like one big room, but the terminal or, but the gate is like way at the end of the room, like super, super, like the length of a half of a football field.
Okay.
And so I start walking at a clip, but I'm not running. And the woman who's like checking, I don't even know what, like the, would it be the
like a boarding pass?
The boarding person who's taking the pass. She yells, "You better run!" Or no, what did she say? She said, "You can run." She's like, "You can run," and I ran.
I ran around
all the way there, and then I still got on the flight. I got in my seat like 45 minutes before we took off, and I just remember thinking, "What were you going to do? Like, leave me there?"
That's so bizarre.
We have so much time, But they boarded. I think it was like they just wanted to board everyone, because then I guess if they get everyone on the plane early, they can shut the doors and get in queue. So I get it, I guess. It just felt a little extra to me.
Yeah, that is a little extra. It's so funny. And
after that, I took it much more seriously. But I was there so early, and then I still almost got left behind because I just wasn't on top of it enough. So I'm still a relaxer, but now I keep one eye on that, on whatever it is I have to watch to not get in trouble. Well, let's take a break. And when we get back, we'll talk about what we're like when we're actually on the plane.
All right. Megan, we're having fun dissecting our own travel habits today. And what a great time to remind our listeners that if figuring out all the details of a great vacation is not your favorite thing in the world, you'll want to check out our sponsor, Funjet. Funjet Vacations is a one-stop shop for all your vacation needs, including flights, hotels, transfers, and excursions. They're experts in the travel industry, so booking through Funjet is a fast and easy way to book your next vacation to destinations like the Caribbean, Mexico, Hawaii, Las Vegas, and Florida.
Funjet understands that travel planning is much more than just getting a ticket and booking a room. It's creating an experience that will lead to memories that last a lifetime. Whether we're talking about a family vacation, a getaway with your partner or friends, or maybe a solo trip all by yourself, Funjet makes it easier to get right to that memory making without having to spend hours comparing hotel costs and researching excursions. Let the travel experts at Funjet do that heavy lifting for you.
For a limited time, our listeners can use promo code FJ50 for $50 off your next Funjet vacation to Dreams Resorts and Spas by AMR Collection. Get more moments that are fun expected. Surprise yourself with where you could go at funjet.com or call your local travel advisor. Restrictions apply.
Sarah, the last few weeks of my life with moving have been kind of like a marathon. So I have really been relying on my daily dose of AG1 superfood powder from our sponsor, Athletic Greens, to keep my nutrition on track. I have been going all day, and my eating routine went a little haywire, but it's great to know that my AG1 has everything I need to keep me going all day long. Just one scoop contains 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. It's a specially formulated blend designed to support my gut health, nervous system, immune system, energy, recovery, focus, and aging.
Oh, Megan, I definitely remember that going feeling from moving. I'm tired just thinking about it. And I appreciate how with AG1, you don't have to spend all that time and money researching and buying a bunch of different supplements, since AG1 has everything you need. I'm curious if you're still putting your AG1 in a smoothie.
Well, I still haven't found my blender in the move, Sarah. So I'm just back to putting a scoop in a glass of water like you do. And the first thing I did when I was setting up my new kitchen is to find just the right spot in my fridge for that really nice canister Athletic Greens makes just for the AG1 powder. That way it's front and center every time I open my fridge, and I'm sure not to forget.
I love it. Well, we have a great offer for listeners. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/momhour. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/momhour to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Okay, Sarah, so we've gotten through all of the leisurely security situation very efficient security, leisurely airline, airport stuff, at least in my case. So let's talk about how we are if we're actually on the plane. So to back up a little bit, because some of this decision-making happens before you get on the plane, people aren't fighting over windows and aisles in the aisle typically, but will you go out of your way to get like a window versus an aisle seat, or either one of those versus a middle seat? Some places you have to actually choose the ticket or choose that seat ahead of time. Sometimes, like with Southwest, you get the early bird check-in, and then you hope to get the seating of your choice.
Right.
And actually, would you even pay for that? So I would say that aisle, if possible, on a longer flight. So I like windows, but if it's going to be more than 2 hours, I really don't like to climb over people.
Yeah.
So I'll take the aisle usually just out of convenience, and I don't spend that much time looking out the window on my flight anyway. And yes, if it's the kind of situation where you have to pay for that, I typically will pay for that. It's not like a deal breaker. There have been plenty of times I've wound up in a middle seat and it's not that big of a deal, but I would just really rather not. How about you?
Well, I don't fly Southwest very often, although I always like it. Nothing against it, but just where I live and what's available. So I'm always choosing my seat when I book the ticket. So there's no vying or like game time decision.
Do you ever have to pay for that ahead of time, though? Because sometimes, like, even United, I think you have to pay a little extra, or American.
It might be that way now. I usually, when I book, I'm usually doing, I am not doing the, like, economy basic because I've gotten burned a couple times. So I will do the next, it's not business class or anything like that, but it's like economy plus. It's the one that allows you to make changes without, like, giving over your first child and book your seat in advance. So I haven't flown very much in the last couple of years, but typically I would I prefer window seats. And to your point about climbing over people, even on a 4 or 5 hour flight, I'm probably only going to get up to pee once because, as we've established,
since your bodily functions have shut down,
I'm not drinking.
You're not drinking anything.
And I don't mind. Asking people to get up like once. I feel like everyone gets like one free pass for a flight.
I agree.
If you're doing it 6 times or something, then I might reconsider. But because of my flying anxiety, the window is the place where I feel calmest. So I always prefer window.
Well, what do you actually, and you just kind of answered part of this question for me. I was going to say, are you nervous? And what do you actually do on takeoff?
Yes, I am nervous, but I am no more nervous at takeoff. I'm just nervous the whole time. I was afraid of flying when I was in my early 20s until I had kids. I think I've said this on the show before.
Yeah.
And then I went through a phase that I wasn't. And then I had a really bad turbulence flight about 4 years ago, probably. And so, I'm just generally nervous the whole time. I can't read or focus on anything. Like, that's the hard part, is because I'm like, my whole brain is focused on like calming itself down, which is why like I don't buy magazines that much anymore. I don't rent movies. I just make it through. I don't do anything special on takeoff. But yeah, I'm pretty. Brian and I like joke nicely that like it's my job to keep the plane in the air, because that's what an anxious brain feels like it's doing. Like if I look out the window enough, and if I think about this enough, I'm actually like somehow affecting the outcome. It's an illusion of control, right? So it feels very busy in my head when I fly. I don't have panic attacks or anything like that. I don't take medication. It's just uncomfortably nervous like the whole time.
Okay. Well, I used to be a very nervous flyer. My first flight was actually much easier than I thought. And then in my like second flight, for no reason, I just got it in my head that I was going to be very anxious. And I was for like, I would say that when I was on the verge of tears the whole flight. But then over the years, I think just doing it so much, so routinely, it went away. And now I'm at the point where like, I don't know, I used to have my whole routine that I felt like would help ward off my nerves. So I wasn't thinking about like keeping the plane in the air. It was more like, here are all the things I need to do so that I don't feel nervous. And one of them was, I always listened to the same album. I always like read the in-flight magazine. Like I just had like this little routine to block the world out and kind of just go in my own little bubble until we were in like, you know, up in the air and the lights were off and whatever, you know, the smoking light was back on, I guess. And now I just kind of sit with my eyes closed because I want my computer back out. Like I'm not nervous. So I just want to get that part done.
Yeah.
So that I can move on to the next thing, which for me would be settling in and working, or, you know, really reading, like doing some real reading, which I don't do on takeoff usually, just because I don't know, like if I'm going to read like a book, I just wait until we're in the sky. I don't know why. No real reason.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll close my eyes and try to nap. If I'm going to get real sleepy, it tends to happen in those first few minutes. Like, when they turn on the fans and everything else. So, and the cabin is depressurizing and all that. So, or pressurizing, whatever the thing is that's happening. Sometimes I will actually close my eyes and take a brief nap on takeoff, which is, I can't believe I'm able to do that now. That did not used to be in the cards for me. So a little side question, do you get the Wi-Fi? And I'll answer this one almost always.
Yeah.
How about you?
Almost never. Because it's, I thought that about so you. Frustrating when it doesn't work very well.
Right.
And I get deep satisfaction about finding ways to work. If I am on a longer flight and I've calmed my nerves and we're just cruising along, I love finding things to work on that don't require Wi-Fi. I'll clean my desktop. I'll like organize my digital files. I'll like work on a writing project or something. So I usually have a plan for something to work on that doesn't require Wi-Fi, because it's so frustrating to me to have Wi-Fi that like is intermittent doesn't really or doesn't work. Yeah. And it's quite expensive. So I have, especially on longer work flights where I can kind of justify the expense, but I don't usually.
So for me, if I have the wherewithal ahead of time, and typically this is the kind of thing I'm doing in the airport during that leisurely sandwich, because I got there so early, I'll be like downloading or I'll be setting some of my Google Docs to offline access and I'll make sure I have a few things open that I can work on. And if I have the wherewithal to do that, I also really enjoy that. I'm being like, ha ha ha, I'm not paying $8. Right. I'm gonna, And now there's more options. So it used to be you just had internet or nothing. And now it's like, I think texting is free on some planes and like, or you can pay $1 to just get access to one kind of thing.
And with streaming, if you want Wi-Fi for entertainment, there's a lot of like free streaming on planes now. If you haven't flown for a while, the entertainment options are, it's much better,
it's
I think.
Much more robust.
Like it's much more personal device centric. Like it used to be like the little movie that played on the seat in front of you or something. And now they've figured out that like, no, you want to watch on your personal device. And there's usually a way to do that.
So I'm going to guess the answer for you is no. But do you ever sleep on the plane?
Only if I'm really, really exhausted from something or I've gotten up really early. And then I will doze if I can get to that place. Usually on a longer flight and almost always on the way home. I'm tired. And yeah, I love to be able to sleep on a flight, but I have to be very sleep deprived. I'm not just going to fall asleep spontaneously on a flight.
Do you have like any special accoutrement, like a pillow or? So I actually got online, I got this thing because I used to have one of those travel pillows that you buy and, you know, they're like shaped like a C or a U or whatever. And I just found them kind of bulky and hard to carry around and that didn't really do what I needed to do. But in general, I would love to sleep longer on a plane. About 10 to 20 minutes is usually all I can get because what I'll do is I put my backpack in my lap and then I layer like a coat on top of it. And I like squish my arms under the coat or the sweater to make like a little pillow. And then I just flop forward and I can stay like that for about 5 minutes. I could turn my head to one side for like 10 minutes. I could turn my head to the other side for 10 minutes and then I'm done. It hurts. So I got fed on Instagram.
Oh, I know.
This thing that like wraps around your neck. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think I have seen this or maybe you sent me a picture. We'll have to link it up.
It looks like the kind of thing you would get if you'd been in a car accident and like you needed to keep your neck still. Yeah. Like that's what it looks like. I haven't had a chance to use it on a flight, but I think it would take care of that floppy head neck issue. Uh-huh. So I'm kind of excited to try it out.
To my preference for the window, when you are sitting at the window, you have a hard surface to your left or right. And so like a sweater or like your coat or something like that can pretty comfortably set up like a natural leaning to one side. And I have made use of that for sure.
That is sometimes if I know that it's going to be like a longer flight where I want to sleep, I have that moment where I'm like, oh, do I want the aisle, the bathroom, or do I want the window for my head? And the other thing I've been able to do is if one seat is just ever so slightly reclined, and we're not going to talk about reclining or not on this episode because I don't want to get hate mail. But like if one is just ever so reclined and the next one isn't, you can kind of lean your head against the not reclined seat next to you. The problem is if you have neighbors, that gets a little weird.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we're on the plane. Maybe we're past takeoff. You know, we've done whatever we have to do to get through that. Are you a talker? Do you talk to your neighbors? Do you pop in your earbuds?
I mean, what do you think I am?
Probably not a talker.
I'm not a talker.
I'm not either. I don't talk to people. I mean, I'll smile at them.
Yeah.
If they're very interesting. There have been times in the past, like I've gotten in a conversation with the person next to me for some reason, but most of the time I'm an ignore. Like I'm in my space. Let's pretend we don't exist to each other.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, travel has gotten increasingly stressful, expensive, unfamiliar. The industry is under a lot of stress. And so I just find even friendly people who I assume are good people, everyone's a little on edge. And I think my worst fear would be to strike up a casual, light conversation with somebody and then have it turn into like something I can't get out of. Which is why if you notice, everyone starts chatting with their neighbor like on the descent because you know there's an end, right? You know, if there's 10 or 12 or 20 minutes left in the flight, no matter how south this conversation goes, it's going to end. Whereas at the beginning of a 3.5 or 4 hour flight, I really have no interest. Yeah, I'm friendly and cordial, but I think I give off a pretty strong body language vibe that I'm not here for
chit-chat. You're not here for that. Yeah. And I also think at the end of the flight, it's like everyone's kind of like collectively relieved. Like we did it. Even if you're not a nervous flyer.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we did it. We're on our way. Like not long. No matter how this ends, it's almost over. Yep. So, yeah. Yeah, I agree. And also the last few times I've flown, or the last two times, I've had a mask on. So that also completely killed talking. Yeah. So this is kind of a funny question. And you kind of already answered this one, but I'll answer it for myself. And that is like, do you use the bathroom on the plane or try to wait? And I guess for you, knowing that you don't actually drink fluids before, what I would say is, are you averse to using the bathroom on the plane?
Not at all. Okay. And I'd probably do it like strategically because I always want to time it. I don't want to get to the point where I've got like really have to pee really bad. That's so uncomfortable. And then the seatbelt sign on or you're in turbulence or whatever, your neighbor's napping or whatever. So I would probably get up to use the bathroom, and I'm not opposed to airport or airplane bathrooms. And I'm probably strategic about when I get up so that it's like I'm preemptively going to the bathroom so that I don't get stuck with a full bladder.
Yep. I do the same. Like I want the minute there's like a, you know, the bathroom light lights up and there's a vacancy, I will go use the bathroom whether I have to or not. Just like I tell my kids to do.
Yeah.
I actually get a kick out of using the bathroom on the plane. It's kind of like, I feel like I'm getting away with something. Like I'm doubling up activities somehow. It's like a game. Like, I don't know. Look at me. I'm both, you know, answering the call of nature and eliminating waste from my body, and I'm getting somewhere.
In the sky.
In the sky at the same exact time. So I actually will get like a real kick out of drinking a lot of water and then having to go to the bathroom multiple times on a flight.
That is,
I don't know
so
why.
Funny. But, you know, it reminds me, you know what I used to do when I lived abroad my junior year of college and I was and I went to college, you know, like a long flight from my home. So I went on a lot of long flights in college, and I started bringing makeup in the, so I'd have an early morning flight and I'd get on with no makeup, like looking like I just rolled out of bed. And I would get that same kind of satisfaction out of bringing some mascara and a little bit of something on the plane. And then the last like available time to go to the bathroom, like in the last hour of the flight, and these were like 10 and 12 hour flights sometimes overseas, I would like do a little like light face of makeup in the bathroom and feel like that same, like I am emerging looking like a new person, and I'm going to get off in a different country. And here we go.
Right. I love it.
Magical.
Okay. Well, we talked a little bit about like what we actually do in the plane as far as like not talking to other people. That's off the table. And, you know, the kind of work you might do. But what about leisure, leisure activities? I'll go first on this one. I like to have like, I like to stay very busy on a plane. I like to kind of rotate through a variety of pre-planned activities. That kind of span the whole gamut of work and fun. So I'll have like my magazine, my Kindle, I'll have some fun work, which might be like creative planning that typically is happening in a notebook, right? So things I'm writing down. I like to have my snack. I like to get my drink from the flight attendants when they come around. I like to listen to certain music, but I hardly ever watch TV or movies. And it's interesting because there really are some good choices, but for me, it's usually not stuff I would watch at home. And it's weird to take myself out of the mode that I'm in and just like, it just doesn't occur to me to like add random TV or movie viewing, even though it's free. Yeah. So I don't do that almost ever. How about
you? I don't either. And I think it's more because I have a focus problem because of the anxiety. So for me on an airplane, time passes very, very slowly because I am in that anxiety state. So I have to do things that don't require a lot of like, focus is the wrong word because there are certain types of work that I edit the podcast. Like audio editing is a great thing for me to do on a plane. It doesn't require Wi-Fi. I know how to do it. It's like both productive, but it's very familiar. It doesn't require like new creative thinking. And I can easily like pause. And like for me, if the plane starts to have turbulence, I have to stop what I'm doing and just like do nothing. Like, so but leisure, I do like a magazine article. That would be one. I will have earbuds in and I would listen to podcasts. So listening to podcasts, work, occasional magazine article. I also do not watch streaming entertainment, hardly ever.
Do you read the in-flight?
Yeah, often I do. Yeah. Pretty good.
Do you work the crossword?
It's always, someone's always gotten there before me. And I'm not like a huge crossword. I mean, I'll do a crossword, but it's not. I do not.
Yeah, I have before when it's empty, but like That's one of those things I would only ever do on a plane. So something feels kind of special about it, but I get bored about halfway through and, or I just can't figure one out. And then I'm like, I rage quit.
Yeah.
So I ruin it for the next person essentially without even finishing it myself.
Rips in the paper, crossing it out.
All right. Well, we're almost there. Now we've landed. So Sarah, the flight's almost over. What a relief, right?
Yeah, I'm so now excited.
We're on the ground. We're on the ground. What are you doing now? Are you like the person who's busily like putting everything away because you didn't do that on the flight? Or are you standing up or you wait for your row to clear? Like, what's your behavior like now that we're on the ground and we're allowed to take our seatbelts off?
I mean, I'm probably on the internet because I didn't buy Wi-Fi. So I'm probably, it's more phone. Like I'm looking at my emails, my texts, my Instagram. Like I am that person who is deprived of like, you know, digital connection for 2.5 hours. And I'm very happy that we're safely on the ground and I'm probably like communicating with whoever I'm going to see next and telling people I landed safely. I'm like doing all that kind of stuff. I won't have spread out very much because like I said, I don't do very much. I like kind of sit there like a scared little rabbit for 4 hours and then I just kind of wait. I'm not in a big hurry to get off the plane. I wait for people to like get their, you know what, together and then file out accordingly.
Yeah. I am like, so I will have done all of the preparatory stuff in the last, you know, before they tell you to, that like everything has to go away. Like that stuff, I'm like kind of tidying and getting everything ready. And I like to have everything put away except my phone in my hand. So I'll do a quick check of everything, but I'm usually doing that while we're taxiing anyway. Mm-hmm. And then I stand up right away. Like the minute those doors open, I stand up and then I'm always annoyed with myself. Like I'm not obnoxious about it. I'm not like pushing people out of the way or huffing and puffing. I just stand up and then I'm doing that thing where my head is like bent.
Yeah.
But then you feel stupid sitting back down because like, why'd you stand up in the first place? So I just try to make the most of it, like standing there with my head totally at an angle. And I'm just ready to not be sitting at that point. Yeah. I don't actually have to move. I'm very happy to wait till everyone in front of me clears out. I'm not in a rush. I'm not pushy, but I just don't want to sit anymore. Yeah. I'm ready to now be ready for the next thing. Like I'm transitioning into the next phase of my journey. So that's typically you'll find me standing with my head cocked off to the side waiting. Well, this has been really fun. It was fun because I know we've been doing so much travel content lately, but it's just fun to talk about how that looks for us in our little, you know, solo travel worlds, which don't happen that often, but I'm looking forward to maybe them coming back a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so. It's like, I know in a month or so, we're going to do an episode about like weird pandemic time warps, but I'm just reflecting on, you would think I would even have a clear picture of the number of times I've flown since COVID, for example. And I think it's 3, once by myself, once with my family, and once with a friend to go to another friend's 40th, all in 2021, I think. Yeah. So like June, July, and October of 2021, I flew. And already it's getting fuzzy. And already I'm like, what do I like to do in the airport? So this is definitely making me, like, as long as it's safe, want to get back out there and get on planes, because it really hasn't been very much in the last 2 years. I think those 3 times, and they were all kind of concentrated in 2021. So
I honestly can't. I came out to visit you once or twice.
May, only once. You came to visit me in May. We went to Chicago together in October of both of those in 2021. But you drove to Chicago. You didn't fly there.
Right. So, but I feel like I did fly twice during the pandemic, but I honestly could not tell you. Maybe just once. Yeah. Maybe just once in the last 2 years. That's, yeah. And I mean, I would have usually flown many more times than that. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. So probably about a dozen times in 2 years. So it's really weird.
Fingers crossed. Getting back.
Fingers crossed. Well, we should definitely remind people about our travel hub.
Yeah, we're calling it our family travel hub on themomhour.com. It's themomhour.com/travel22. And it's a page that's going to grow as we move through this spring season and closer to summer. So it's kind of a check back often, but we have contributors who are writing really practical things on the blog, like what to pack for a road trip with little kids and like how to stay in a hotel with a baby and like all these kind of questions that we get. And quite frankly, you and I are not equipped to answer anymore on the podcast. Right. So there's a ton of blog content. There's a ton of podcast content, both from new stuff we're coming out with this spring, but then also all the times we've talked about travel in the past from the before times. So we will link that up in the show notes. And then I'm excited, coming up on Tuesday, we polled our listeners and got their single best piece of travel advice for traveling with kids. And the list is exhaustive and very helpful. So you and I are going to be talking through our listeners' best travel advice for traveling families. And that's coming up on Tuesday. That'll be fun.
Sounds great. Well, we'll talk to you then.